Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hi, it is time for TMZ.
Hey, it's time.
It's time.
It's time for TMZ.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to TMG. I'm your host, Travis Patton Sr. I enjoy discovering and sharing real-life moments of inspiration from everyday people. And this show is about finding moments of inspiration for our everyday lives. And look, and if you're going to tell me something, then tell me something good. Everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of TMG. I'm your host, Travis Patton Sr. Hey guys, listen, I'm excited to be here today. Let me tell you a secret, guys. You give me all this excitement. Man, I could not wait to get here to do this episode and be here today. Guys, first of all, you know how we like to do this before we get started. I want to give a huge shout out to my biggest supporter, my biggest fan, my lovely wife, Nicole. Hey, girl, how you doing? I know you're watching. I know you're listening. Man, tell everybody that's watching and listening all around the world, let me take this time to tell you thank you. I'm so glad that you're here. And if this is your very first time tuning in, your very first time hearing and listening to the show, do me a favor, if you will, please. Drop me an email. Or better yet, before you do that, do me a favor. Type the word new. Yeah, the word new right there in the chat. N-E-W. Type the word new. And if you're driving or if you're at work and you can't type, just say the word new and I'll hear it. There you go. Put it in the atmosphere. I'm so glad to hear. And whether this is your first time tuning in or someone told you about the show and you're hearing us, thank you so much. And whether you are in Sri Lanka or Portugal or Spain or Japan or China or the UK or guys or Poland or wherever you are, South Africa, Mexico, wherever you are, Australia, across this globe, France, guys, man, let me tell you, Italy, I'm so glad you're tuning in to the show. And right here in the good old United States of America, I'm so glad, guys, that you're here. Everybody knows that this show is all about finding moments of inspiration in our everyday lives. So if you have an inspiring story that you'd like to tell and maybe come on a show, drop me an email at TELLMeSomething21@gmail.com. And you say, with Travis, I know someone that has an amazing and an exciting story, and your audience would love to hear from them. Oh, cool, great. Send me their information right now. You have it, send it to me, TELLMeSomething21@gmail.com. You say, with Travis, I don't want to come on the show, man. I'm a little camera shy. That's okay. Still send me their information. That person that you're thinking of right now, send it to me. TELLMeSomething21@gmail.com. And guess what? And you can even remain anonymous if you like. So there you go. Guys, I'm going to go ahead and play the sponsorship information. I want to get it out of the way, guys. Visit our sponsors, guys. You'll see the information. in the chat below. And if you're not in the chat, you'll hear it later. Guys, listen, I'm going to put this information, but we'll be right back. Don't go nowhere. Yeah, we're just getting started up in here, guys. Come on in.
Sponsor of TMG Tell Me Something Good podcast. Please use the special link, bit.ly/tellmesomethinggood, and visit our sponsor. Remember, I may earn a commission when you buy through this link. Fanatics is the place to go for all of your officially licensed sports gear from your favorite sports and sports teams. Use the special link, bit.ly/tellmesomething21, and pay a visit to our sponsor today. Remember, I may earn a commission when you buy through this link.
Breaking your phone sucks. Breaking your phone, then trying to sell it online, sucks. Breaking your phone, selling it online, only to find out that the money you'll only get for it sucks. Breaking your phone, selling it online for peanuts, shipping it, and finding out that you got scammed, sucks. Gizmogo makes selling your phone fast, safe, and simple by paying you the highest price for your device. And with Gizmogo's free unlimited shipping and price guarantee, millions of people are starting to sell on Gizmogo. Fast, safe, simple. Gizmogo, the best way to sell.
There it is, guys, right there. Please visit one of our affiliate sponsors. Well, how can I do that, Travis? Look at the blow right there in the chat. The information is right there in the chat. And if you are watching this and listening to this later, listen up for the information. It's going to get played again. Man, guys, today's episode is one that we hear a lot of things about and we talk about sometimes maybe in passing. But today's episode is really exciting. If you did not catch today's episode title, guys, today's topic is A Place for Me from Cell Blocks to Comebacks. Yeah, A Place for Me from Cell Blocks to Comebacks. And man, listen, I know you're wondering where Travis is going to go with that, guys. This is going to be good. When I thought about this episode, I could not help but think about when I was a kid, when I was a child. I know, I'll show you what I'm talking about, but when I was a child, when I was coming up, I was born in 1969, a different era, a different time. And I know I'm dating myself. I'm 54, so I'm good. born in 1969, it was a completely different era, a different time. When I was coming up, growing up, there weren't video games like we have now, right? I don't think the Atari didn't come out probably until I was in middle school or somewhere along those lines. But it was quite a long time. So to entertain ourselves as kids coming up, we did things like go outside. I know. Or we rode our bikes. I get it. Or we would have these nights at home where our sisters and I would get together and we played board games. And I know, who out there remembers board games? I do. Raise your hand. If you remember board games, do me a favor. Type the name of your favorite board game in the chat for me, please. I do. So remember playing board games. When I was coming up as a child, every child, and board games were serious, man. We took board games very seriously in the house. You know, if you were winning at board games, oh, man, you were the champion. No one could touch you. And if you were good at board games in your house, you would play against board games with other people and other kids in the neighborhood. And they knew one thing. You were good at that game. And, man, you could grow socially if you were good at board games. Everybody would know, oh, man, don't play checkers with Travis because he's going to be really good. Everybody would know you. So when I was coming up, every child could easily find their place within the social pecking order by way of being good at playing board games. I know, right? And whether it was playing games like my favorite, Sorry, or Trouble, or Candyland, or maybe even Operation, or even Checkers, which I like, we all found our place somewhere. And then, of course, there were the card games like Go Fish, Crazy Eight, Old Maid. Now, me, I enjoyed puzzles. The reason I enjoyed puzzles is because it was always an adventure searching for the right piece to go in that missing place. I did. My mind would say it's an adventure trying to find them. And no matter how many pieces were included with the puzzle, and no matter how oddly shaped the pieces were, there was a place for each piece. Each piece had a home. You may not be aware of this, but on a single night in 2024, an estimated 259,473 people and families were identified as homeless. They were that missing piece to the puzzle. They didn't and they could not find their place. And approximately 18,557 people in families were living on the streets, in cars, or in another place not meant for human habitation. And adding to this growing number are the number of prisoners released from jails or prisons looking for re-entry back into society. Today's special guest, guys, knows firsthand what the sting of homelessness feels like and how he took his experience to help those in similar situations turn their life around and re-enter society. Guys, do me a favor. Give a huge TMG welcome, guys, to our very special guest, John David Graham. What's up, John? How you doing?
I hardly know where to start, because all I can think of listening to you is this is exactly why my mother said, don't have sugar for breakfast.
John, I got to be honest with you. I've had a little sugar.
You're being polite when you say a little. I'd say you were hitting the bottle pretty hard of that sugar bowl.
Listen, I had a little bit of sugar. I was very tempted to eat an Almond Joy. I said, no, not before the show.
You have energy enough for both of us. I'm not an effervescent person, but I think it's rubbing off. I feel much more outgoing now after talking to you.
I know, man. It's palpable, John. It's transmitting across the airwaves, man. I can feel it. You just can't be in the room with someone with its energy, that energy, and it not get on you, John. It's contagious, man.
However, my one bit of advice is you may want to consider Ritalin.
That's not the first time I've heard that. That is not the first time I've heard that.
Yeah, after listening to you, anything I say is going to be a downer. Gee.
See, this is why I drink chamomile tea, John. Yeah. See, I even out. It doesn't help much, but I even out.
Well, Eddie, all that said, I'm looking forward to talking with you and your people today. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, man, we're happy that you're here, John. You know, you and I talked before the show, and so I'm excited to dive into this. I'm so glad that you are here, that you took out time for your busy, busy schedule, because I know you are busy, to help us out today. John, now, we all must begin someone. Everyone has a beginning. Everyone has a beginning. It's like those board games I was talking about earlier. John, if you're trying to put a puzzle together, you always begin somewhere. Some people might begin on the edges, or if you're playing a Operation or, you know, Sorry, those games, you begin somewhere. And humans, our lives, we all have to begin somewhere. You began somewhere, I began somewhere. So we all must begin somewhere. John, tell us a little bit about yourself and how things began for you, if you don't mind.
You said you were born in 69, and I was thinking about that.
Yep.
The thing I've found is, you know, I look at you and you're a very young, handsome man. And
And, thank you.
I'm 76, even though I feel like I'm half of an age.
Oh.
I can't deny the fact that it's gray. I'm not the hard body I used to be. But what happens is it gives you perspective over time. And what I heard when you said you were born in 69 was in 1968 is considered to be the apex, the high point or low point, depending on your perspective, of the conflict in our country during the 60s. And I was in the middle of that. I had lived peripherally through the civil rights protests. I was too young for those. And I lived in the North, so I didn't see it firsthand, but we saw it on the news. We saw social unrest. But then the anti-war protest, and we had what we call a draft, and everybody was affected by the draft. And I was planning, I had gone to college, and I was planning to go into the Air Force because I was accepted as an officer, which seemed like a great career move. But then I stumbled into Kent State and the day of the shootings and the students who were killed. And all that conflict came crushing down, and it became extremely real for all of us, not just me. But the very fact that we could shoot our own who were protesting. Now, to be candid, they were not peaceful. The protesters were as guilty as the guard. Mm-hmm. And that was a very strong lesson. I wasn't physically in that protest. I was physically in another one that day at Ohio State. And I remember the guards pointing their guns at us, and we did not know what would happen. And so I see all of that today through the lens of 1970 when that occurred. In fact, I walked away from the Air Force knowing that I could never be part of that institution. And it took me 35 years to enter a phone booth, or not a phone booth, a voting booth.
Wow.
We don't have phone booths anymore.
Wow.
But it took me 35 years.
No, we don't.
Because we lost faith in the structure of government. And it wasn't until probably 9-11. 9-11 seemed to unify people, and that quickly degenerated into Iraq and to Afghanistan. And we were back into the same Vietnam quagmire. And I'm seeing a whole lot of then today. And I'm seeing violence, but mostly what I'm seeing is a disrespect and a disregard for the rule of law. That greatly concerns me, because the thing about Dr. King and the protests of nonviolence was he believed in the rule of law and he believed in the basic good of humanity. And if you could appeal to that basic good, you could come to a reasoned, just solution. He appealed to your conscience. I'm not seeing that today. And that worries me. I'm seeing utilitarianism, where whoever is strongest, whoever has the biggest army, whoever is the loudest, is therefore right because you're the baddest. And that worries me greatly. So throughout that 35 years, there was a series of career moves because I couldn't. I couldn't find my niche. And at one point, I was even homeless. The thing with being homeless is when you're single, it's more of an adventure. It can be frightening. It can be nerve-wracking. It can be concerning. But, you know, you stick out your thumb and hitchhike and you take off. You know, I went back and forth to San Francisco several times. I slept under bridges, slept in cornfield.
Oh, wow, John.
I remember I was up in Glacier. The Glacier National Park, up 6,000 feet, and I pulled an Achilles tendon, and I had to hobble all the way to San Francisco with a bruised tendon. So you don't think about those things.
Oh, wow.
You just don't think about it. But here's the problem with all those career moves. 30 years later, when I had a family move from state to state, we were near homeless again, and that was extremely frightening because now you have a family.
Right. Now you have people get your
whole different ball game. And that's when I started to really look at it and talk to my wife and say, I have made all these career detours. What is our passion? Mm-hmm. What can we do that we feel we can make a difference and still face up to the things that we've been upset with or protesting? So we decided to buy an old house and fix it up as a shelter. And share that house with homeless persons who were struggling as much or more than us. Right. And that soon led to the Department of Corrections saying, we have men coming from prison who are homeless. Mm-hmm. If they just had a safe place, that would, it's the data shows that they will not repeat their offense because they can get a job. Right. They can pay their bills. They can pay taxes. They can become part of the community. And we started doing that with the state of Ohio with what we call a per diem contract. Mm-hmm. They paid us a small amount of money to cover our costs because it costs $109 a day to keep somebody in prison. Now, you take that times 50,000 and you see where the money goes. But if you have somebody in the community and you're paying a few dollars for housing, they get it for free. They get a job. They pay taxes. They pay child support. And the difference is instead of becoming a tax burden, they're a taxpayer. And so in the past 25 years since I started Good Samaritan Home, that's our nonprofit, we have housed and mentored 2,500 men and women. And we now have 19 houses in the Western Ohio region. And I just feel like I took my detours and helped somebody else with their detours. And we both win.
Absolutely. John, first of all, man, thank you for your transparency about your life and the times that you were homeless. And then you said you had all these different career choices. And we're talking about, you know, today's episode titled A Place for Me. When I think about, you know, when you go from job to job, career to career, and you said there were detours and you were trying to find, you know, whenever something's a detour, you're really trying to find the right route to where you're trying to go to. You're trying to find the right path. So if you had all these detours in your life, John, you were trying to find a place for you. You were trying to find a place for you. And how wonderful is it? What the irony of life is, you know? You had all these detours trying to find a place, and then you reach back, and when you're in your wife and you discover your passion was the very things that you dealt with, the obstacles that you dealt with earlier in your life, those were the answer to somebody else's problem. Your struggles became someone else's answer. We can never, John, undervalue the things that we have to go through in life because sometimes it's not for us. Sometimes we don't know why. But the things that you were going through, those obstacles, became the answer for someone else, John.
What I've learned, Travis, is that we like to think that life is a sprint where you simply go to high school, get good grades, get into a good college, and then you get a good job and a big house and a beautiful wife or husband, and you have this great career, and everything is fine, and your children are all athletes, and they're beautiful and perfect, and they look on you with admiration. And what I've learned is that particularly for those of us who grew up in a family that didn't have that structure, or we didn't have that direction, or education wasn't emphasized, or we grew up without a mother or father, I cannot tell you how many times my residents will say, number one, I don't know who my dad was. Number two, my mother was my dealer. And number three, I was in foster care. Again and again and again, I hear that. And these are people like me, even though I appear to be middle class, I really struggled to find out where the starting line was. How can I run a race when I can't even find the beginning? So I was always behind, feeling like I could never catch up. And what I concluded was life is not a sprint. It's a marathon.
Exactly.
I'm 76, and I just am now catching my place, I call it. At 76, I was able to publish my novel. At 76, I'm doing these podcasts. At 76, I'm looking at writing a second novel. So awesome, all of this to say, you will fall down, particularly if you were born with a limp like I was.
Man, that was good.
Getting up. That's the important thing. Absolutely critical. Do not quit running.
Man, John, you said a mouthful. You will fall down, especially if you were born with a limp. If a person, you're already born into a situation that's not favorable. You're already born into a situation where you don't have the advantage with society or with what you're trying to do. You're going to fall, but keep getting back up. It's hard to keep someone down who's determined they're going to get back up. Yeah, it's hard to keep somebody down, John, when their mind is made up, I'm still going to get up. Is there any, I want to know if there's anybody that's listening, wherever you are, maybe you're listening like this at work, or you're watching, or you're driving. I want to know right now, if, are there any people that's listening that's determined that you're going to get back up? Yeah, if I'm going to get back up. I don't know what you're going through right now, what you're dealing with, but if you are, type it in chat and put in chat, I'm going to get back up. I'm getting back up. Maybe you failed last week. Maybe it was last month, but I'm getting back up. John, share with us in which ways early obstacles challenge your perspectives on the way you previously viewed life and the way they impact the current perspectives you have about homelessness.
Maybe the best example was when I started Good Samaritan Home, I thought I was doing a good thing for the community. We were offering shelter for people. But what I found was immediately blowback from the community. There were petitions. There were calls to the city council. There were ordinances passed. There were editors, letters to the editor saying, I can't live in that neighborhood anymore because of his house. Or I had a 10-year-old girl say, I'm afraid to go to school because it's near that house. They were afraid because
serious?
We had one man who had been in prison. Now, I'll be quite candid. He was a black man. My neighborhood is predominantly white, so I know race entered. It always enters the factor. We don't say it, but it's always there.
Yeah, it's always a subtext.
That's right,
subtext.
Because we assume that the people we see on TV getting arrested because they're in Dayton or Cincinnati or New York, and many times you see a black man getting arrested, George Floyd. But statistically, the majority of people in prison are white. You just don't hear that. But what changed for us was the meth epidemic and then heroin, because what we found was that seems to be no longer a black drug. It's a universal drug for anybody who wants to escape.
It's a universal thing.
And it's very common now in the rural areas. And that means your son and daughter, your cousin, maybe even your sister or you have that same addiction of those people. And it changed a lot of attitudes in our town. And although we did take three lawsuits and a lot of threats, at one point I had police protection. But here's what happened. Here's the key, Travis, is right in the middle of all this lawsuit, we bought another house to expand. Now, that to me was not so much for them, but it was to tell me that I'm not quitting.
I'm going
to get up. No matter what they throw at me, I'm going to get up. And that to me is the greatest lesson. Don't ever quit trying.
That's it, man, John. And first of all, the story is incredible. The fact that here it is, you're really trying to help society as a whole, not just your neighborhood, but society as a whole. You're trying to paint a better picture of society, and you get opposition, immediate opposition because of what you're trying to do. And let me just say this here. Just because we have all these wonderful aspirations to do great things and help people and help society, don't think that people you won't have opposition. Don't think that you won't have things that come against you. And John, let me say this. When we try to help people as a large or do things in a large to be helpful to others, the first opposition, and I'm going to say this, the first opposition will always come from people that look like us. Some of the biggest opposition Dr. King had came from people that looked like him. Some of the biggest opposition leaders have will come from people that look like you. I don't know how many times you go to church and the church will have people that fight against the leader from people that look just like them. They look like you. You would think that, John, that they would say, oh, yeah, man, they would rally behind you. This is a great cause. And they would get behind you. But whenever you're trying to do something worthwhile, it's going to cost you some sweat. It's also going to cost you some time. It's going to cost you some effort. But I heard you say this, John, and this is to our point, a place for me. You said no matter what they threw at you, you were determined to get back up. You were not going to quit. And that's the attitude, John, that we all have to adopt. That's the attitude we have to adopt. And we're talking about people who are homeless and people coming out of prisons and out of jails. They have to have that attitude that I'm going to get back up. And when they're coming out of these situations, John, that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to get back up.
One of the detours that I took through my life was I tried my hand at being a minister, small town church. And I never did well at it because the truth is that being a minister is very political. It's based on how well do we like you. And like you means that did you make me happy? And we like to
make me feel good.
Did you make me feel good? And I was always thinking that a teacher, a minister should make us feel bad so we can feel good by changing. And maybe it's the old Baptist side of me there, where if it didn't hurt, it's not a good sermon. but what happened was when I guess you could say I was a failure as a minister because I wasn't that successful. And that's when I decided to go into the street, because what I concluded was I felt safer in prison talking to my residents than I did in a church board meeting. I knew.
Wow. Are you kidding?
I knew those guys had my back. I wasn't convinced the church did. I even had a we were in the middle of this conflict, and I had a pastor knock on my door, and I was looking desperately for support because, like I said, we had police protection at one point. And he said, "Do you ask your residents if they're saved?" And I said, "I ask them if they're hungry." And he said, "Well, I can't support you then because you're not doing your role as a Christian." And I thought, now this is why the church is losing attendance, because you've lost your soul. So I've concluded that I am still a minister without portfolio. I'm in the street. And I'm giving the gospel message through my hands and my feet, showing concern for the outcasts, the lepers. And my guys are lepers in our culture. They are lepers.
Correct. Yeah, they're the ones that people we walk past, we overlook, they're the ones who they're not even a second thought in society. You know, no one thinks about them. I remember when COVID hit, and the whole end thing, whatever your stance on COVID was, who cares? It doesn't matter. Whatever your stance was, finally people started thinking about people like frontline workers, the cashier. They start thinking more about people who were like the first responders. And then they start thinking, oh, wait, we have all these people in jail and prison. They've always been there. They've always been there. And we have a tendency to overlook individuals that aren't on what we think aren't on our standard, aren't on our level. We set a standard for people, and if they aren't on our standard, they're nothing. Or if they do certain things, they're nobodies. Man, and you're right. They are definitely what we call the lepers of society. They're things that you don't touch, you don't talk about. And if you do talk about it, you talk about them in a very demeaning way, John. And
imagine if you were locked up in a 6x12 cell, and six times a day you were to line up and be counted, and everything was regimented. You had a certain time to get up, a certain time to shower, a certain time you had a job in prison. Everything lights out at a certain time. Then all of a sudden, They open the door and say, you're free. You're on supervision. Check in with your parole officer in the morning and don't come back. And then they say, your parole officer says, get a job. If you don't get a job, I'm going to violate you because you're not trying. And you pick up this thing. You have no idea what it is. And that's
what it is.
How do you find a job when there's no one ads in the paper? There's no phone booth on the corner.
Come on.
And Nancy Reagan said, just say no to drugs, which had to be the most simplistic response to the drug culture I've ever seen. It's like saying, just be good.
Yeah. Just be good. Just be your best. Just be your best.
Yeah,
self.
So I've learned that there's a whole lot of gray out there. And most people, all people, need a hand up. They don't want a handout. Mm. They just want somebody to give them a chance. And that's what we try to do. We don't try to make it for you. We don't do it for you. We just give you a place that's safe so you can make it with our help and support.
Absolutely. Everybody, John, what I've learned, I've been around individuals, John, and who had done difficult times in jail. And when I listen to their stories, and then what they tell me, they say the same thing you're saying. I just want someone who's going to give me a chance. I just want an opportunity to find my place in society. It's like that puzzle I was talking about earlier when we began. Every piece of a puzzle has a place that it fits, where it belongs. And it can be oddly shaped. It can be what we may call misformed, but it's cut that way to fit a certain place. It's specifically cut that way. And maybe right now, John, there's people who are listening and they've been through different things and different detours in their life, and they've been cut and shaped differently by doing different decisions, by limited way of thinking, by the way they grew up, by their environment. Maybe right now you're being cut by something and your life looks different. It looks odd and it doesn't look like everybody else's in society. Maybe it's different, but you do have a place that you belong. You fit somewhere. And John, here it is. Imagine this. Like you said, you've been in prison. You've been in jail. You've been in prison 15 years, 20 years, and you pick up that thing that's called a cell phone, and everything is different, John. There aren't worn ads. It's on a phone. You barely even have a paper anymore because it's all digital. The whole world is different now, John. Nothing looks the same. And we're asking them, okay, go find a place in society. Well, when I was coming up, I was born in 1969, John. Imagine taking someone who's born in 69, who's in 69. They get out of jail in 2025 or whatever. And now you say, oh, just go be good. Go do what?
Yeah.
How do I do that? How do I do that in a place that, first of all, doesn't want me, that forgot about me? How do I fit into a place like that right now? Maybe there's people listening right now. Maybe you've done some time. Maybe you've done.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Done some difficult, made some poor, difficult choices, and you're trying to fit right now. Maybe you just haven't done time in jail. But a physical jail, maybe you've done time in the way you think. Maybe you put yourself in a mental prison and you're trying to find out where you fit right now in society, in your family, in your life. There is a place for you, as oddly shaped as you are. There is a place for you. You fit somewhere. John, let me ask you this question. In case, kind of throw some stuff out there, because I mentioned this earlier on. According to recent data, John, over 600,000 individuals are released from state and federal prisons each year here in the United States, with a significant portion of them being released to parole supervision. Approximately two-thirds are rearrested or experienced recidivism, where they are arrested for either the same or similar offenses within 3 years. How did you become interested in becoming a guiding light to this sector of society, like you said, that almost seems like, you know, lepers and the overlooked people? How did you become interested in becoming a guiding light to this sector of society, which oftentimes, as we both mentioned, go overlooked and forgotten?
I'd like to say that we had this vision and we had this plan, but the thing about moving, when you're moving, suddenly doors open that weren't open before. And all we started with was a homeless shelter in our own home, and we stayed with that. But I also did some volunteer work with the Department of Correction, and they were working on what they called the Ohio Plan. And what they were doing was they were trying to find ways to reduce recidivism, because the numbers, as you said, were 60%, 70%. Ohio's were running at about 51%. And that means that majority are going to come back. And that lock them up mentality just doesn't work. So what they did with the Ohio Plan was they focused in on reentry. And we became part of that when they said, would you use your shelter and take in men coming from prison? And so we stepped into what their need was. And as their need grew, we grew our program to meet that need. And we've gone from one house to 19 houses over the past 24 years. That's the key element, is being adaptable, being flexible. And we keep asking, what is the need in the community? And Ohio's recidivism has dropped to 30% now. And then those who have gone through the county reentry job training, their recidivism is 10%. So these issues do work. And I like to say that here in my county, where the original house is, we now take probationers from the local court. Instead of going to jail, they come to our house and we save jail costs. So I calculate we've saved the local government, the same one who tried to shut us down, we saved them $1 million in jail costs.
Wow.
And what I like to say is that's something even the Republicans can like. It's saving money.
You know, John, man, to hear that story, and what I like, John, is this. You know, a lot of times when we want to help with a worthy cause, or we want to participate or volunteer to do something or do something great, a lot of times we want lightning to strike us, or there's a big cloud or something to speak out the sky. A message from God.
Tell me what to do. Just tell me, yes.
Yeah, we want a burning bush experience. Yes. And if you're not familiar with a burning bush is, it's a story in the Bible with this guy named Moses. And Moses is up this mountain one day looking after sheep. And he has he walks upon this bush that's burning. But the fire isn't burning the bush. The bush is not being consumed. But it gives him this epiphany, this great moment he has. So it's a burning bush moment. And we always want these big, extravagant things to happen. You said, man, I would like to say we had a vision, but we didn't. We just started somewhere small. We started with what we had. We began where we were. And let me say this to people. Maybe you're trying to find your place. Maybe you're trying to find where you fit right now. Maybe you're trying to find where you fit within society. Maybe you're trying to find out where you fit wherever. And maybe you're trying to start and say, how can I help? What can I do? Start where you are. Yeah, just begin right there. Find, John said, man, I even volunteered. As you move, ideas come to you. When you begin to do something, well, I don't know what to do. What is it that you want to do? I want to be able to help people do this. Then you go volunteer. You find whoever else is already, you go volunteer. If you say, well, I want to be able to have a home for people who are elderly and help, you go find whoever's doing that and you help them. help someone else with their vision. You begin somewhere and watch, it will begin to feed what you're trying to do.
One of the things I've noticed, I don't want to get into politics too much, but I've been doing a lot of reading in William Shire's Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. And one of the major defenses that the German officers had at Nuremberg was, I was only following orders.
Only following orders.
And what I'm seeing today is people are stepping in line without thinking, saying, this is what my party wants. This is what my group wants. This is what my church wants. And I'm hoping with these podcasts, I'm hoping that people begin to think and say, what is the right thing to do? What is the moral thing to do? And God will tell you what to do if you think through it, and it will come through your intellect, through your brain.
Correct, man.
You're not going to get the burning bush. I haven't seen one of those since Charlton Heston.
Hey, give it up, man. I know, right? I was just watching that movie the other day for that very same reason, to see that burning bush. We're not going to get it, man.
Well, actually, what would happen if the bush did start burning? Some fireman would come and put a hose to it.
Or somebody would call, your county commission or Salt Lake City and say, hey, he's illegally burning something over here.
Actually, that happened to me once when I was burning some wood in my backyard.
Oh, my gosh, you're kidding me, John. You're kidding.
I said, oh, that's my burning bush. They said, that's okay, son. It's a fire. That is a true story, though.
Oh, man. It's crazy, John. But we always think that something spectacular has to happen for something amazing to occur. And it doesn't. And I like to study history, John. I love studying history and how things began. My wife and I have this show that we enjoy watching, and it's called Foods That Changed America.
Yes, I've watched it. Great show.
Okay, great. Okay, and what I love about it is how these major foods, or these major brands, how they had the smallest beginnings, the very tiniest beginnings, and you'd be like,
cornflakes.
That's how cornflakes. They were started off as a health food.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We didn't eat breakfast like that.
We didn't eat. No. Yeah. They were health food. Grape nuts. All those things began as health foods. And now they became major brands and major players. And we don't even think about that. But the point, John, is that there is a place for it. And we want these major things to occur before something major, wonderful happens. We just have to begin where we are. We just have to begin with what we have. And we're talking about going from cell blocks to comebacks. These corporations, these companies, John, they began small. They began as ideas. They were locked into a person's mind. If they never let them free, John, we wouldn't have certain things right now. And we have people who are re-entering society from jail, for whatever, prisons, from whatever it was, John. And like you mentioned earlier, most people just want a help up. They want a hand up, not a hand out. And that's what you offer to individuals who come to your facilities. What type of services do you offer individuals that require housing after they are released from incarceration? For instance, besides housing, job readiness skills, mental health practices, those things that we mentioned. Because when you come out, and think about it, now, I've been in prison 5 years, 6 years, a lot of things have changed. What are some of the things that you offer as far as skills-wise?
Yeah, see, that's a very good question, because there's a tendency for entrepreneurs or people with a passion for something to try to do everything. You try to handle all of it. And what I've learned is that the need in our community was for housing. And with my construction background, I could offer the housing. And so we offer the element they needed. But Job and Family offers the food stamps, it offers the Social Security. They offer job training. The county offices has a job preparation class.
Wonderful.
Mental health does the counseling. So we refer to our partners. And good. They refer people for housing to us. So it's the cooperation by working together so we don't reinvent the wheel.
Exactly. And see,
find your niche and do what you do well. Try not to do it all because you do it poorly.
John, let me tell you something. You probably, with that statement, just release people from so much stress. Because as you mentioned, when you do become an entrepreneur, you do whatever you're trying to do, or if you're trying to open up a nonprofit, you want to do it all. You want to do it all. You can't do it all. Find people. Do what you do. Find your niche. And find people that you can get in a great relationship with that can help the next right. level of it. Find and help it. Well, that means I'm not. Are you doing this for yourself, or are you doing this to help others? Because if you're doing it to help others, you're going to need relationships. If you're doing it to help others, you're going to need other people. If you're doing this for yourself to try to look good for yourself, you're not going to do well trying to do everything. The only creature I know that can do that, John, is an octopus. And I think we only have two R's.
And I will say this, Travis, that since we started working with partners, the people in the community who used to wave at us with one finger early on, now they wave with all their fingers because we're part of the community.
Exactly. It changes people's perspectives when they see that you're willing to work within the framework of society. Look, I'm not trying to take over. I'm willing to work, but we have a lot of times, John, we fall into that trap of that I don't need anybody else. I could do it by myself. No. You can't do it all by yourself. I can't do this podcast. I can't do all this by myself. I can do what I do well and a lot of the designs. I know what I want in my head, but I don't create them. I don't create the designs. My logo, I didn't create that logo, man. I can do it.
That's a good one, too, by the way.
Thank you. I knew what I wanted in my head. I presented it to somebody, and they did it. You have to be able to partner with people who's going to help push what you're trying to do. And what you're doing, John, is you're saying, hey, look, I offer housing. This is what I can offer them. This is my niche. And when people come out of prison, John, that's their immediate need.
Let me give you a very practical example of that. I've been planning for years to write a novel. And finally, at age 65, I sat down to write. And in 3 years, I thought I had, which is a long time, but I thought I had the American story. And I sent it out to be published, and I got rejected. Sent it out again, it was rejected. Sent it out again, rejected. 200 times it was rejected until I hired an editor who's a young guy, 26 years old, right out of college, but he knew literature. And the first thing he said reading my novel was, I don't like your main character. He doesn't seem like a nice guy. And what happened was I presented a black and white, a two-dimensional character because of my background in academic research. He taught me how to let the emotions out. And for 2 years, we rewrote that story. And today, we have a book that people cry over. They say, I couldn't stop reading Daniel's story. I am Daniel. And I felt Daniel. And I cried with Daniel. And that, to me, was my editor's input and teaching me how to let my emotions out.
Correct.
How to make it real. So we can be one leg like this, but somebody else, see, you turn it around, look, we lean into one another. Look at that. See, that we're leaning away. Now we're leaning in. That's how you walk healthy, leaning into one another. Help one another.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So when individuals, John, are coming to your facility, coming to your facility for this housing, they're getting there, John, and they're coming out of these cell blocks. They're coming from prison, coming from one environment into a healthier environment. They come into an environment where they're safe, and then they can begin to start to thrive. Are these services aimed solely for reintegration, or do you offer services for those who may be in transition? Because I know you said you began with some people who may have been homeless, looking for a place. Do you still also offer those as well, or is it just aimed solely at those for reentry?
Well, right now we're only focusing on reentry because we can't mix the street with the parole, because the parole referrals are highly overseen by the parole officer. They have certain accountability. There's a hammer. If you mess up, the parole officer is involved. But on the street, there's a tendency to say, whatever I want to do, I'm going to do it, and I'll just keep moving on. There's not that respect for the structure.
Correct.
There's
correct.
Not the hammer. So we don't do the off the street anymore. But oftentimes, off the street is just one step away from, or will be, coming through the parole officer shortly.
Absolutely.
We had to make a hard decision, and that's how we went.
I was about to say that there is a correlation. There's a relationship between those who are homeless and those who are in jail because of the fact they don't feel they belong. Because of the fact they say, well, oh, I don't feel I have my place. They feel like I don't have a place for me. Has anybody ever done this? Have you ever had a puzzle, right? And you're putting the puzzle together, and you put it together, you're working on it for a week, maybe a month or a day or something. You work on it, you're good. You leave it on the table, or you leave it on the floor, and you leave it there. You keep putting the pieces together, you keep putting the pieces together. And then all of a sudden, you get down to three pieces. Oh, man, you're excited. You get down to two pieces. Oh, man. And you get to that one piece, and you can't find that one piece. You look under the table, you look under the couch, and the floor. Who moved my pieces? Who got my piece? I need one piece. And it's missing. That missing piece. And you provide a place for the missing pieces.
I will tell you this, Travis, that we have rules that we have to abide by. We're audited by the state. We're accountable. Mm-hmm. We're documented. And that's critical. But there's also a place, and I teach my staff this, that here are the rules, but there's a place where the rules end and people begin. So how do we reach those people who don't fit totally into the rules? So I've learned where to bend and stretch, because in the name of mercy, sometimes you have to adapt.
Correct.
For people's sake.
That's fantastic. It's like I saw someone who had a missing puzzle piece on a table. John, you know what they did? They traced. Yeah. That's it. They traced the piece that would go in there. And sometimes we have to trace individuals to fit in. We have to bend the rules, but to be graceful to other people. And right now, when we're talking about people going from cell blocks to comebacks, sometimes we have to find a way to grace them in. We have to find a way to grace them. And whenever you're tracing something, you didn't draw it, you didn't design it, you just traced it. And you didn't make the colors, you just traced it. And a lot of times right now, there are people that just need tracing. They just need some grace. That's all they need. You don't have to try to build their home. They just need you to trace them. They just need some grace. You don't have to try to, you just got to find a way to trace them right now. Because think about it, John, we've been traced. We have people to find some grace for us.
Let's apply this to the current situation in the socio-political realm. And there are certain rules that are being enacted where we have to say, because you weren't born here, because you are a different color, a different language, I'm frightened of you. You can't come in. And we're going to arrest you and put you in Guantanamo Bay.
Right.
And a perfect example of that is Springfield, Ohio, which is near here. And there's 15,000 Haitian immigrants who came here legally. And suddenly, they were accused of eating the neighborhood cats and dogs.
And goose.
And now, there's talk of erasing their legal status. And these, according to everybody in Springfield, including the mayor on down, these have been assets to the community. 15,000 people came into a town of 50,000 and put great stress initially but everybody worked together. Man. Not legal stress, just growth stress.
Correct.
And these are hardworking. This is the nature of America. Hardworking immigrants who want a chance. And the same applies to my residents. They want the potential. They want to just have a chance to be hardworking.
Man, that right there alone, John, is worth its weight in gold. People want a chance. They want a chance to be able to prove that I do fit. And I might be that missing piece. Right now, you're listening. You might be that missing piece. We just need to trace you and grace you in. Among other things, John, you are also an author.
what happened? It's interesting. When I went to the city council to defend our program, I would take reams of data. I had file after file, and I would give the data of how this is actually better for the community.
Right.
And you could hear the crickets because nobody was listening. And what I've learned is data does not change minds, and it absolutely never changes hearts. The best comparison I can give is think of the movie Titanic.
Okay.
At core, the bottom line with Titanic, it's a story about lifeboat safety. It's the idea that if they had enough lifeboats, they could have saved the 2,200 people.
Could have saved everybody.
That's right. But nobody would watch that documentary. So what they did was they put Romeo and Juliet, they put Jack and Rose into it.
Yeah.
A mismatched background, made it into a love story on the Titanic. And today we're still talking about it. It's been 30 years. So what I tried to do is take this reentry story data and turn it into Daniel Robinson's struggle to find his place. And I modeled after Forrest Gump, who ran through history. And Daniel ran through Kent State. He ran through Detroit riots. He ran through San Francisco drug culture. He was in the middle of all that until he found his Kate and his Rose. But we like to think that was the end of the love story, but there's always struggles like Forrest had. And that's the story that resonates. So I wrote a book called Running as Fast as I Can. And what the idea is that some of us are doing the best we can. We just can't keep up. We just can't catch up. And that story, I just got word this morning, we just got our 31st award for that novel.
Congratulations.
I was so pleased. And majority of the awards are for historical inspirational fiction. The idea, it's not just a book. It's an inspirational book. And we've sold, the average book sells about 250 copies in its lifetime. Most books don't sell well. You think you're John Grisham, but most of us are Joe Wannabe. And that book has sold at current rate, 12,000 books.
Amazing. Amazing.
And the reason it's sold that many is because readers have written back to me and they've said, I've felt Daniel. I lived Daniel. I traveled with Daniel. I am Daniel. And
wow.
That is an essence of a story. That's where recidivism and inclusion and immigration tolerance comes in running with somebody who has a limp.
Oh my gosh, John. Then that right there will have a whole episode by itself. This is the book right here, guys. Running as Fast as I Can. And as John said, that we all don't run at the same pace. We all don't run at the same speed. We all have different issues. And if you look at this guy here, I think he has sandals on. Everyone is not even equipped the same way to run. We're not all equipped the same way to run. Some people right now, maybe you're listening, and you've been trying to keep up with society. You've been trying to keep up with everybody, and you're out of breath. And you're right now, you're just running as fast as you can. You're just doing the best that you can. You're doing everything you can to do the very... Maybe you have to stop more times than others and catch your breath. Maybe you're trying to catch your breath right now, and you feel like, well, if I don't do this, I got to do this, I got to do this, and you got to do this. And you're just running as fast as... And you're catching people right now, John, when they come into your facilities, and you're catching them, John, because they're running as fast as they can. Right now, this is as fast as I can go is to be in this housing, is to be housed by somebody else. As fast as I can, maybe I need some help doing this. As fast as I can, maybe I need some public services right now. As fast as I can, maybe I need somebody help me with re-entry. Maybe I need someone to help me with getting a job. As fast as I can, maybe somebody, you're listening right now and you're doing the best that you can to try to keep things stable. Maybe you're doing the best thing that you can just to try to keep up with everybody else. Maybe you're not called to keep up with everybody else. Right. Maybe you're just called to run your own race. Maybe you're just called to do the best that you can, John.
I'm going to say one thing political here. I'm having a great struggle currently with several of the richest men in the world trying to cut services from the poorest people in the world in the name of budget and balancing our budget and in the name of streamlining our government. Mm-hmm. If they want to streamline, what about the $38 billion SpaceX contract?
Yeah.
Let's streamline that. Let's go through a litany of Mr. Trump's failed bankruptcy businesses. Let's talk about that before you start cutting Social Security from somebody who only gets $700
a month. That's all they get from the people who are trying to run as fast
that's
as
right.
they can.
And it's not forever money. It's temporary money to help somebody until they're strong enough. I've got a staff member who had surgery on her foot. She can't work for 6 weeks. Did we cut her salary? No. We kept her on salary because she will die without her daily or weekly salary. And she's not earning that, but not at least on paper, but she's earning it with her loyalty, with her commitment, with her mindset that says, I will do everything I can, even with a cast, I'm available to somehow help you. That's what I think. She wants another chance, and we're able to give it to her. That's what moral people do. And right now, I'm questioning where our morality is in government. And I apologize for getting into that, but it ties into where we are.
Absolutely.
We have to address who we are as a people and where we want to be as a people. What do we see in the mirror? If I save $10 and lose my soul, then what have I gained?
Man, it's like that song, you know,
by
Mike. No, you're good, man. I told you, bring yourself. It's like that song by Michael Jackson, a man in the mirror. It's got to start with us looking inwardly and how we. I asked a question earlier about how your earlier challenges, you know, challenged your perspectives on homelessness because, you know, I heard my mentor, who's my pastor, Stephen A. Davis. He says this. He says, we don't know how serious things are until it begins to affect us. You know, until it affects us, then it doesn't become real.
That's
it
right.
doesn't become real until it affects us. So he says, do something about it before it becomes real, because it only becomes real when it impacts us. It only becomes real when it knocks on your door and says, hey, now you got to deal with it. And when, like in your book, people trying to run as fast as they can, you see somebody running, it goes, oh, okay, it doesn't bother. It doesn't bother you until you have to run.
There was a German there was a German pastor named Martin Niemöller, and he lived through the Nazi occupation.
Uh-huh.
And he said, when the Nazis came for the trade unionists, I didn't speak up because I'm not a trade unionist. When they came for the Jews, I didn't speak up because I'm not a Jew.
Uh-huh.
And when they came for me, there was no one left to speak.
Woo.
And so that's why you and I are on these podcasts talking about where are we as a people, individually and corporately.
Yep.
Where do we see ourselves? Where do we want to be? Who are we? And
exactly.
I hope someday we'll stand before God and say, I did my best.
Exactly. Because when we're talking about finding a place, helping a person find their place, going from cell blocks to comebacks. We all, and I know you think I'm just talking about, we're just talking about just that individual. We all play a part in that. We all play a part in helping people go from a cell block to their comeback. When I think about the movie Rocky, I think about the person that was in his corner. You can do it, Rock. You can do it, Rock. He had someone helping him with his comeback. Everybody, you're going to need some help with your comeback. I'm going to leave that alone for a minute. I'm getting ahead of myself, John. John, if someone is listening right now, if someone is listening to this episode in passing, and they need some encouragement about their current situation, or maybe John, they know someone who's facing homelessness or coming out of a prison or jail, and they need some encouragement. What are some resources that you are able to provide? I know we can look at them locally. What's the resource you're able to provide, and what is something that you would say to encourage them?
Well, first of all, I can be reached through my website, johndavidgraham.com. And you can access several downloaded free chapters of the book, but you can also write me there. And if you were to say, I've got a nephew, I've got a son, I've got a brother who's coming out of prison, what can I do? Well, the first thing I would say is don't feel like you have to carry somebody. You do what you can do, because when I get girlfriends and mothers calling, they're always being, I think, being taken advantage of if they're not careful. Mm-hmm. So there are options. There are options in the prison counselors. There are options in the parole board. And if they're local, there may even be housing options in our area in Ohio. So link into Good Samaritan Home off my website. And let's just say you don't have to feel you're alone. There are many, many people who have been in the same boat as you. And at the very least, we can offer some direction.
Absolutely. And we're looking at the Good Samaritan Home right now, website right now, guys. This is how it started right here.
Yep. That's our first house. That's how it looked when we bought it.
Wow.
And it's a model for our work, because everything looks like it needs repaired until it's repaired.
And that's how you are receiving the people that's coming in, John. They look like they need repair until you guys begin the work of helping them to be repaired. Man, that is absolutely amazing, guys. I told you this was going to be a great episode. John, let me say this to you. Thank you so much for taking out the time of your day and sharing with us, John, and helping us to understand some different things and see people with different eyes that, oh, they're not just, you know, the scab of society. They're not, you know, these lepers that we think they are. Maybe I can help somebody with their comeback. John, don't go away. I got some words for you. Let me go ahead and say some things real quick, John. Stay right there where you are. Guys, listen, everybody, I'm going to put up a picture here real quick, guys. Look at this. I want to put up a picture of some before pictures and some after pictures of people who were in jail and now they're doing better. Let me say this. Everybody has a before and after. Yeah, everyone has a before and after. And maybe you are ashamed of it. Maybe you don't want to talk about it much. Maybe you don't like to bring up the past. But everybody has a before and after. And maybe right now you're in your before phase. Maybe right now you're struggling with your before phase. But I want you to know something right now. You might be in your before phase. Even if you're in your before phase, there is an after for you. There's something better that's for you. You will not remain where you are. Everybody has a comeback story. I know they told you you would be that way all your life. I know they made you feel like you would never amount to anything, but there is a comeback in you. I know there are times you felt like you couldn't, but right now, if you're watching this, please do me a favor. type it in chat. It says, I'm coming back. I'm coming back from whatever your poor decision was. I'm coming back. Say it out loud. Say it to yourself. You know I'm a firm believer of positive confession. Before you weigh out the bed in the morning, just say it. I'm coming back. Yes, you are. You are coming back. I'm so glad that you joined me here today. I'm so glad you took the time to listen to the show. Guys, listen, don't forget, you can also watch us, our episodes on YouTube. That's Tell Me Something Good with a capital T. And you can stream, guys, on your favorite listening platform like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Pandora Music, and so many more. Guys, I got to get out of here. But as always, in parting, if you're going to tell me something, then tell me something good. I'm out of here, y'all. I got to go.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.